I keep hearing that Donald Trump won the greatest political comeback in American political history. And yes, that's true. He won the popular vote. He won the Electoral College. And Republicans were swept in along with him in the Senate and the House. So Republicans control all three branches of government right now. But you know what? I want to salute the American people. Because the American people fought the deep state, and the American people won. It's not easy. It wasn't easy to cut through all that noise and lies in the media. And the work isn't over, and it's not done yet, as long as there are those in the shadows hiding. One person who can make sense of all this is the American expert on the deep state. He studied it in Turkey, where the concept deep state was born. He studied it in the United States. He served 30 years more at CIA, U.S. State Department, National Security Council, National Intelligence Council, and various other postings. He served in Ankara, Turkey. He served at the White House. He's my brother, Nick. If there's anyone who can talk about the deep state and what will come now, it's Nicholas Cass. And he's our guest on the Chicago Way. And Jeff Carlin is also here. Jeff is a WGN executive producer, and he's my friend and a future physics teacher somewhere in Illinois. And me, I'm John Cass, former columnist, now editor, I guess still columnist, at johncassnews.com, where you always get a good cup of common sense. And I'm asking everyone to subscribe right now because we need to go forward and America needs to go forward and we got to shine a light on that deep state. And where are you with the rats squealing in the hold, afraid of the sunshine and the deep state actors trying to hide themselves and their purpose, moving journalists around like useful idiots? You're on the Chicago Way podcast on WGN Plus.
So this is a guy who lives high on the hog, and he has this Tammany Hall style attitude to power. And it's the Chicago Way, absolutely.
Look, the Chicago Way is a deep cultural phenomenon.
It's the Chicago Way.
The Chicago Way. That's the focus.
In a tower by the river, there lived a man. There was a man who took a stand. With pen and paper in his hand. Defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso. In a tower by the river. Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago Way.
As promised, in this hour of utter panic and defeat, as the deep state licks its wounds, here we have the expert on the deep state, America's expert on the deep state, Nicholas Cass. Yes, he's my brother. 30 years plus serving the country with CIA, U.S. State Department, National Intelligence Council, at the White House, and other posts. Welcome to the Chicago Way, Nick, on this post-election extravaganza.
Hi, John. Hi, Jeff. Thanks for having me on again. Absolutely a great day today.
Yeah, thanks, Nick. John, what you always leave out the, and Nick, am I in the, when you're talking to the CIA, am I the odd man out here? Like, is there something I don't know?
No, a lot of people just say CIA.
I mean, is that like the, you know, I feel like, am I the tool? And if I'm saying the CIA, it's like
the Ohio State. You could say, used to work for the CIA or CIA, it's okay.
All right, I just want to make sure I'm cool.
You are cool.
It's a little.
Do both.
It's a little pretentious of me because I've never been there in the CIA. I have visited there.
Yeah.
But I've never been there to say Nick worked for 30 years at CIA because That's a hint that I know what I'm talking about.
Okay. That would be good for the podcast, actually.
Well, okay, here's something that's good for the podcast. I wanted Jeff to bring this up, but I think maybe I'm your brother, so I should bring it up.
Okay.
Are you going anytime to Mar-a-Lago soon?
To get
the blessing and the instruction.
No. I'm here in Washington. I'm doing color commentary for Romania's biggest news channel. It's a CNN affiliate. And for the guy, Mihai Gudea, who's like the big news star there. And I'll be here all week. I'm going to see some friends, that kind of thing. But no, I'll be here in Washington until I go back to Bucharest. And then from there to Kurdistan. And then we'll see what happens after that.
But would you accept a job, a position with Trump, with the new Trump government?
You know, I just had a great time serving in his National Security Council. It was fantastic. I really, really enjoyed it. And, you know, I did it for 31 years, John. I mean, you know that. And it's kind of like it gets into your blood after a while. And, you know, you never really quit in a way. Your brain's always operating in that kind of in the terms that you developed over the course of so many years. So, yeah, if somebody, you know, I would listen to somebody. If somebody were to come and say, hey, we got, you know, can you do this? What do you want to do? Of course, I'd listen to it very seriously. But I do have to say that I love the private sector, and my kids love it. And, you know, Constantine loves it. She loves it. And, you know, we love Romania. We're really, really happy out here. And, you know, I don't think anybody's really eager to just sort of jump back into that world again. But of course, I mean, who knows? You know, you'd have to listen, and that's the way I look.
You are making a good living in the private sector, way more than you were in the government service. And I'm sure you understand that the government can't compete with that. But you know, we'll see, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's like I remember when I retired and I started working, and a buddy of mine who had retired a couple of years before me had said, and we both retired, you know, sort of senior rank. And he said, well, now you know. And I said, now I know what? He goes, that you've been working your whole career for minimum wage. So it is nice. Like I say, the private sector has its benefits, and you get to use the same skills or most of the same skills. And it's just been great. So, yeah, I mean, okay, we listen. I take it seriously, obviously. I'd be honored by the attention. But, you know, I don't want to say I'm like Odysseus trying to get out of Troy. It's not that. Right. But it's, I mean, I really like, we're really enjoying ourselves and the peace and that comes with it. So, anyway, but we'll see. Right. I mean, if I can help in any way, I will.
Well, let's turn our attention to the present matter.
Yeah.
Jeff wants to know what he should tell all his liberal friends who are crying this day. I say save the salty tears, because I like to drizzle them on my popcorn. But what do you say, Nick?
I say that, you know, you're never going to get completely away from the idea of the Schadenfreude. You know, you're going to enjoy it. And that's understandable after all the BS that we had to endure for 9 years now from the media and from the establishment view. But this was I think it is the best possible outcome, because what it is was and it wouldn't have happened with her, could not have happened under Kamala Harris, but under Trump, we had a decisive victory, decisive. Mm-hmm. You know, electoral landslide even. And it was not just a rebuke of Kamala Harris and her poor candidacy or whatever. It was a rebuke of everything going back to the 21st century that, you know, we always talk about as like where we started to go off the rails. It was a rebuke of the Clintons, of the Democratic Party, of Biden, of Harris, of the Obamas, of the Republicans, of the Republican establishment, the never Trumpers, the neocons, the Cheneys, all of those people were rebuked soundly. It perfectly worked out so that that was the unmistakable result, with the Cheneys joining the Democratic Party and all the Never Trumpers, you know, trying to, you know, sort of see if they could maneuver their position back into control of the GOP, and then turned it into the Washington Generals, you know, the sort of junior partner on the circuit, where they could sort of trough, you know, graze at the trough and just have a little plaything. And Trump just completely nailed that, and nailed that very, very clearly on a very clear agenda, very clear. And so there's no doubt that now, as a result of this, the Republican Party is completely transformed. It is no longer the party of Reagan. Reagan was a great man, but those days are over. It is the party of the 21st century. And he did a huge favor to the Democrats, just as he did a favor to the Republicans, by coming to the Republicans in the first place and taking on the establishment. Remember, everybody just wanted to sort of, nothing to see here about Iraq. They wanted to go back to put another Bush in power, and there was going to be no consideration of Iraq and the however many hundreds of thousands of people that we killed. None of that was going to be on the agenda, and Trump's, you know, just called it out. So he did a great service to the Republican Party years ago by cleaning it out, and now is, I think, finally consolidating the situation. He's doing that also for the Republican Democratic Party, doing that and giving them a chance to sort of rethink what they're doing. And he put the deep state in the worst possible position it could be. I mean, a complete repudiation of the deep state, its operations, the lawfare, the censorship, the, you know, the arrogance of these Kamalist elites, all of that has been put on notice. And so we're in a great position to make some changes. But you cannot rest on your laurels or think that they're not going to counterattack. And, you know, I know people are listening to Kamala Harris right now as we speak, probably. And there are a lot of folks who don't want to, they don't want to give up the fight. They're still angry. If they were truly ideological beforehand, they are now. They'll set, you know, and the question is, what are they going to do? A lot of them will go underground. And I worry that now the locus of the deep state counterattack will be on the very Democrat or Republicans who are going to be in power, and will be susceptible to the honeyed words of bureaucrats and others who seem to know so much. It's another tactic and another way to frame the issue. You don't have to ride roughshod over a politician and tell them it's my way, the highway. You can sweet talk them into doing the same things you want. And so we have to be very careful and very vigilant about the, you know, to avoid the capture by deep state framing of issues. And so we'll see where that goes.
That's the question, right? Where do we go from here? And if is this resounding loss for the deep state, you know, that their attempt, their candidate, their whole system now seems to have crumbled and is rebuilding. And John and I have talked about this, you know, the idea that what holds next, what 4, 8, 10, 100 years from now, it's going to be it's Trump's world, right? I mean, he's Roosevelt of this, you know, this century, changing so much as he's done, and he will do more. What does the deep state do next? I mean, how do they regroup if that's the threat to him in this next 4 years?
There's always the danger of capture by the institutions. Mm-hmm. A politician who comes to town will be swayed. That happens all the time, and it will be operative here, particularly with matters of war and peace. And so there's a real danger with that. And so I think that there's a couple of things that have to happen. One is going to be an actual cleaning of the stables, like Hercules. You know, mm-hmm. You've got to let go of people. You've got to move them out. You've got to find where the problems are. You have to identify the politicized programs, get rid of them. And I know that, Elon Musk and the other guys have been talking about this Department of Government Efficiency, DOGE, right?
Yeah.
We'll have to see what they want to do. But I think he was saying the other day, if they just want to identify people and start to move them out gently, you know, give them a time to say thank you for your service and give them a time to transition and, you know, make sure they get paid and all that kind of thing. It's probably an inexpensive way to deal with it. And then you start to, but then you have to find new people to do these jobs. Where are you going to find them? Well, you know, you might have to start going, you start thinking about recruiting from red states, universities in red states, which are going to be sort of more liberal anyway. I mean, you can't get away from that, it seems. But, you know, it may be institutions that themselves have shrugged off the DEI criteria for advancement and for good grades. And you have to, I think, systematically comb your way through all of these institutions. Everybody who's getting federal money has to be subjected to this kind of scrutiny. And then you have to bring people get them out of D.C., move some bureaucracies out. There's lots of people who don't have to be here. And, you know, move them somewhere. But then if you move them, you have to make a decision. If you build a federal bureaucracy in some state, chances are that state's going to be blue eventually. So you're seeding the transformation of a state into a blue state if you're not careful. So you might have to pick one that's already blue, like Colorado or someplace like that, and make those the sort of locus of your attention. But
or Kansas, like you could take Kansas City and move the FBI right there.
Or you can turn it into, who knows, you can turn it into federally tribal, what is it, the Fatah in Pakistan, you know, the federally administered tribal areas, just turn it into the federal area where you have all these, like, you know, federal workers going, and they're just kind of like not really part of the local scene. We have to be seriously, but I think the main thing has to be the end of the ideological domination and imposition of DEI, wokeness, you know, the LGBTQ stuff. All of that has to go, not because some of these issues have no basis in fact. I mean, I think that's not the problem. The problem is the way in which these things have been inculcated into our society has been through a neo-Marxist framing that actually distorts people's ability to see reality. And we're paying for that now. And you're seeing that. Look what's happened to the Democrat Party. It was basically taken over by that. Now they're surprised that they just got their ass kicked, right? So we need to, like, really transform the state, transform the institutions. I hope we can do it.
One way to do that is to celebrate, and I don't mean by cheerleading, but celebrate the idea, the notion of merit as integral to the American character.
Right.
But you can't just direct people and manipulate them into, and then, like, here's merit, and you dangle it like a shiny object, and they have to embed it in their way of life.
Well, you know, I was talking to a guy, a conservative magazine guy not long ago, and actually this week, and he was telling me, you know, in a lot of universities, their people are gone, but there are universities where people are used to, they understand the need to be practical because there's money involved and, you know, the people who do the best work get the most money. So there's really a built-in sort of incentive for them, for people to think that way. And he's pretty confident that absent the sort of ideological imposition, that that natural tendency will rise to the surface. Now, I'm not using his name only because I don't want to be mischaracterizing what he said. Because right. I may have botched it completely, but I think that's basically the outline of a very smart guy. And I think that there's probably something to that, but, you know, I'm not convinced. I mean, I think the deep states, a lot of people, it's like the rats in the hole, John. They go in there and they hide, right? And they can hide for years. And if you look at the experience of Turkey, and I think, again, this is probably very useful, they thought that they defeated the deep state in probably 2011, right? They finally had another election. They defeated the Turkish general staff's control of politics and life in Turkey. But 5-6 years later, a deep state gang staged the coup d'etat, a bloody coup, and they tried to, you know, they wound up killing about 300 people, wounding about 2,000, and almost overthrowing the government. So you never know. And the problem is that we've talked so much about the need to do these kinds of operations to preserve democracy against the fascist Trump. The question I have is how deeply indoctrinated into this stuff have people become? And not everybody has to be that way. You can have a lot of cynics in it, but you'll also have the true believers. I mean, you remember those Hollywood movies about World War II, like Rommel, and, you know, some SS guy would come up to him and give him the Nazi salute, and he'd be like, yeah, 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 and just sort of like perfunctorily perform it. thereby demonstrating to the audience who was watching the movie that this guy really wasn't a believer. There are lots of people who aren't true believers in this stuff, but there are a lot of them who are. And that, I think, is going to be a challenge. And the only way to really uproot that is to start to reform the educational system, particularly the federal educational system, where our tax dollars are going to promote these kinds of things and these programs. And so we have a right to maybe police that a little bit better. So it has to
be. But in all the theoretical talk, there has to be some some measure of concrete steps.
Yes.
One I'm going to offer here, because it might be uncomfortable because you know them, but I just think for the purposes of honesty and clarity in our listenership and my readership, that we have to go there. There were 51 whores.
Yeah.
I will say, I shouldn't say whores. I should say American intelligence community operatives who sold out their honor and signed on to this ridiculous letter that said the Hunter Biden laptop bears all the earmarks, typical weasel word, of Russian disinfo, when they knew that it wasn't.
Of course, it was a lie.
What should be done with them?
Well, it's probably not criminal for them to say that. And thank God for the First Amendment, which protects the right for people to say things, even if we really disagree with them. And so we have to be very careful on that side. But the fact of the matter is a lot of them were probably government contractors with security clearances. And there's no law that says they have to keep their security clearances, particularly if they engaged in a behavior that was detrimental to the tradecraft and to the discipline and to the service. And this is, I mean, one of the tragedies of that was that they helped undermine people's respect for an institution, not so much an institution, but a discipline,
right?
Intelligence discipline, that it's actually very, very necessary in this world. And if done right, actually helps you see reality and truth as opposed to, obfuscation and BS. But I remember we talked about this once before, but John, you had like the Nathan Hale statue outside of the Tribune, right?
Yep.
And there's a Nathan Hale statue in some other government building in Washington. And, and you know, whenever, and
it is.
And it's basically the same statue. And I remember, and I'll just put it in terms of the statue I saw at the Tribune. When I first started out, I would see Nathan Hale, you know, sort of like bravely going to his, scared, but bravely going to his death as a guy who spied on behalf of George Washington to save the revolution, etc. But the older I got, the more I would look at him and I would see that he was completely manipulated into a position and he was looking at you going, what the hell am I doing here, right? So I don't know, maybe it's just me and the perspective that I had that changed about this, but I think these people really abused and did great, great disservice to the tradecraft and to the discipline. And I think it's fair to say that I'm not the only person who feels that way. And I so that there should be some corrective taken. And I think not allowing them to be able to continue with this kind of association, I think, would be at the very minimum.
Strip them of security clearance,
and it would be a humiliation for them, and it should be. But if they can't graze at the trough anymore, whatever it is, or slake their thirst at the trough, then I think that's a good start. People take an oath, right? And they take an oath to defend the Constitution, and they pursue a vocation when you go into that line of work. It's not just a job, you know. It's like you're becoming a member of the priesthood or whatever. I mean, it's like really you take it that seriously. And for this kind of tawdry behavior to be, sort of displayed by senior people is extremely damaging to a workforce that's already got its finger in the wind trying to figure out how they can get promoted as good careerists by doing the DEI necessary. And the problem with that is, of course, it breeds exactly the kind of person you don't want doing the job. So there's lots of things that have to happen in this respect. And you know, pour encourager les autres, we have to figure out what to do and not let people just skate away without any kind of consequence. I'm really troubled by this, you know. It's not an honest mistake. I mean, this is the thing. If you read that letter, it, like I've told you before, if I was responsible for writing a piece of analysis that looked like that, or somebody gave that to me and was expecting me to present it up on someone on high, I would fire that person. I'd say, you know, you
to the president. Yeah,
you haven't learned anything about how to do this job. You haven't learned anything about how to present information clearly. No weasel words. No cowardice here. That's not the way it operates. That's not the way you should operate.
Right.
It's not why people go into that business. And so the very fact that these people who wrote that letter and signed off on it were so clever, were so happy with the cleverly phrased ass covering for things, right. It tells you exactly where the corruption is.
The and appearance so, yeah. of, right? The appearance of.
Yes, yes. This yeah. But it's corrupt and it needs to change, and we need to start, burnishing the sort of respect that people have for
Nick, that. You're a serious man, and I was not thinking in serious terms when I thought, well, throw them in prison, all 51, which I don't know if you could, or give them the opportunity, you may renounce your citizenship and be treated like the man I wrote about Wednesday after the election. The man who without a country,
right.
And we'll give you an opportunity to either go to Ukraine or Hungary and stay there.
Hungary, I would say they have this thing. Okay, it's called Lagos, and it's basically you take a big frying pan, like a huge frying pan, right? And you put oil in it, and then you get this bread, and you fry this bread that sort of like covers the whole frying pan.
Yeah.
And then you put it in a paper boat, and you pour ladles of goulash over it. It's the best damn thing. But it definitely will, you know, clog up your heart. But what it shows you is that Hungary is a civilized society. It's a wonderful place to be. Food there is incredible. So, yeah, I would definitely choose Hungary over Ukraine. What?
They might like going there, then.
Yeah, they might, but they've been terrified by Viktor Orban, so you never know. You know, they might have little nightmares or something. You know, so because he's such an evil guy. But anyway, where were we, John? I'm sorry, I just kind of.
I'm just thinking, where's Jeff in all this conversation? Jeff, what do you think should be done with? Kamala Harris is lost.
Yeah,
he's defeated. Now what? Now what? What's the next step for you, Jeff? What should we do?
Personally, no. I mean, the idea of you know these 51 who are should be excommunicated from the deep state, I guess, is the idea. But their money trough though isn't the idea that they can sell their their connection, and that's going to be just shutting that off. Like, how do you make them hurt there? Because you're not going to be able to send them out of the country. I mean, that's you do control all the government. Oh, but
come on,
cancel their security clearances.
Right. I mean, you nail it. That's what they're going to do. And then so then what is CNN's going to be? You know, doing what to just reporting into the wind? They're not going to have anybody to talk to.
Yeah.
But I think you know Trump's going to his big mark here is going to be obviously the Supreme Court because he's likely going to have another appointment here before the end of this term, in some accounts, and that'll be long lasting.
Hold it. Say again.
I mean, there are some accounts that, you know, someone like Clarence Thomas is of the age where he can retire now, and Trump can appoint another younger justice of his like. And that means he's, you know, solidifying his legacy and reshaping the Supreme Court in, you know, a conservative tone.
Yeah,
but his big thing now, he's already did that the first term. That was a huge success, right? He can hang his hat on that. This thing is, I think, is going to be, you were talking about moving the government, or maybe, I think it's going to be a reduction in government through attrition. You know, he's going to leave it to all these agencies to wither on the vine that will have no funding. They'll have no ability to hire anybody. He'll put a freeze in effect, and he'll just starve out these facilities. And it'll be, there was an old joke where, they're going to be able to buy a box of pens, but not be able to buy the caps, right? That's how it's going to run. And that's how he's going to reshape for a long time, Roosevelt style changes to the full scale government for the next 100 years are going to be what he's going to be able to do, since he's got seemingly both chambers of House and the Supreme Court made the way he wants it. So what stops him, right? Is there going to be anything except is the deep state is going to be sleep through this for the next 10 years until they can find somebody to retort, because there's nobody in the Democratic Party right now who apparently can step in front of this train.
So, no, exactly. I think you just have to be very vigilant in this, and you have an opportunity really to roll the deep state back and discipline it. The problem, however, is there's always going to be opportunities for bureaucrats with quote-unquote expertise to be able to assert that expertise in the face of politicians who don't know X, Y, or Z. Those politicians will then succumb and submit to the framing of issues by these people who may or may not be offering analysis or whatever it is, and that reflects the national interest. So it's a very, very dangerous problem. And even if this process goes on with the best of intentions and people aren't trying to sort of subvert the system, eventually you start getting into this situation of, capture. And that means at the end of you're no longer doing the kind of oversight that you need to do, the kind of skeptical oversight that's required. And once that happens, then you're back square one in a mess. And, I think we've done a horrible job of congressional oversight. It's become showy. It's become, just a sort of way to reach people in cameras with fancy questions that can get little blurbs on TV. But the real work is hard. It's really hard, and you've got to really study it, because otherwise people will run rings around you. And if they don't get it, if they don't at least start asking questions and saying, look, I'm not an expert, but I just don't know this. You have a sacred duty to try to explain it to me, despite the fact you might not think I'm so smart. And then force that kind of oversight onto the situation. Without that, then you're back to square one. I mean, it doesn't have to be an intelligence issue. It can be almost anything that any agency in the government. The EPA is notorious for it. All these agencies are notorious for it. The Department of the Interior, whatever it is, they're all sort of susceptible to capture. And if you have that, then you have the problem that of the unaccountable administrative state, which is kind of like the deep state, but usually not operating nefariously, but certainly with
a corrupt drone state. Yeah.
Yeah. So,
you're talking about something that's vital.
Mm-hmm.
And does it involve celebrating government, or does it involve stepping back away from government and seeing it for the thing that it is?
And I think the latter.
Producing and proceeding that way.
Yeah.
I think that might be the way to go.
You've got to be skeptical.
Yeah.
I mean, think of all the crap that we had to go through with respect to trying to get Fauci to tell the truth on gain of function.
That little weasel.
Right. And then he was like, it was like amazing. And the extent to which people, sort of clapped and supported him and defended him to make it even harder for people to get to the bottom of what was going on. And nobody's paid a price for any of this stuff. So there's a big challenge in cleaning out the stables. Trump has to do that. I think he'll do that. I think what he'll do is also drill as soon as he can to produce energy that will lower energy costs, that will lower the cost of everything, and start really helping normal people not having to spend high prices on their energy. And then thirdly, he has to start phasing out these wars. And, Marco Rubio is kind of a neocon, but seems to have adapted, was talking today about how we need to end this war now. We need to phase out of this. We got bigger issues going on besides Ukraine. Now, that doesn't mean that a guy could be smart on Ukraine and then be as absolutely neocon like when it comes to the Middle East or China or whatever. So you have to be very careful on that score as well. But We have to start moving forward on foreign policy issues, defense and security policy, on the economic agenda, and on this reform of the state. Otherwise, it's going to be a big problem. And also, you know, ending all this ideological imposition.
While you're at it, Nick, could you please put the turtle in the bowl and just leave him there on a rock so he can't get out? I'm speaking of Mitch McConnell.
The turtle.
This creature, you know, besides his family connections to China and all the rest, this creature is to me the epitome of, it's why I'm not a Republican, why I call myself a conservative, not a Republican. And he is something that should be
term limited.
I'm so not supportive of that idea, but
yeah, neither am I.
But I just think he should be isolated and shunned and perhaps caned.
Yeah. You know what's weird? Turtles, you think of them moving really slowly, right?
Right.
But I saw one, just some dude that like a TikTok thing, and basically had some food in front of it, and the thing got up on its back two legs and was sprinting across the room. It was the scariest thing. Like, you never think they're going to run fast, and yet they were able to move very, very quickly. So, I don't know, it just freaked me out thinking about that guy. But yeah, there has to be some sort of way. I think term limits is the danger, because then that just enhances the power of the permanent bureaucracy.
But you can't. One of the battles is you have to, I'm thinking of Kamala Harris's commentary recently, where she's saying the fight for our freedom will take hard work.
Yeah.
Wait a second. You're free now, honey. Yeah. You're an American. What are you talking about? Why does the media? Okay, here's the question. How can you continue to talk nonsense after you get your ass kicked?
Well, we'll see what she does. I suspect that she's going to fade away into obscurity, actually.
Is the media going to fade away?
No. I mean, you know what's interesting right now in terms of the media? I think you're seeing a lot of people who are not. Some people are like trying to hide and trying to be like nice now. And they're like, well, you know, we in democracy, you're supposed to let the other side talk. You know, they're doing all this stuff, and they've ended all that talk about the filibuster rules gone. there are a lot of people who aren't. They're going to be committed and fighting to the end. There's all that. But, you know, I think that there's probably most of these people who follow this stuff are doing it because they think it's the price of admission of the club. If you take that away, they'll have to find some other thing to be weaselly about. I mean, they are weaselly-minded bureaucrat types, not really people who are interested in the actual discipline and whatever it is they're supposed to be doing. And they'll find whatever the other requirements are, and they'll, you know, start to ape those as well. I mean, it's almost like unavoidable. The challenge with DEI in particular, and why that has to change, and I think DEI, I think the way Kamala talks, to the extent that she does, is a reflection of these sort of ideological principles. It's like putting a helmet on your head with blinders. I remember when I was a kid, you know, there was this thing called Weirdo, right? I used to have this when I was like 7 years, right? And it had like purple horns sticking out of the side, and it had like a blast shield face, and you would wear it and run around and stuff. 7-year-old kid wearing that. And I think that's what DEI is. DEI is like a set of blinders that really obscures reality. And so, unlike the other sort of bureaucratic codes to advancement, this one requires you not just to sort of genuflect to it, but actually to adopt and think in those terms. Otherwise, I mean, that's part of the game. And so that makes it particularly pernicious. And I think that's got to absolutely go. Anything like that has to go. And maybe that way we'll start to get back to appreciating reality, or at least attempting to try to perceive reality, which is good because we don't have much time to screw around anymore. Got a lot of threats out there, and if we're not paying attention, or if we're doing things because comports with a certain ideological point of view, and it doesn't have to be DEI, it can be other ideological points of view. There's lots of them out there, and people use the same tactics, whether they call themselves conservative or not, to sometimes try to restrict free speech and free thought. But if we don't stop doing that kind of stuff, we're going to be hurting ourselves really badly. And it's very, very pronounced. We're at a very advanced stage of this
sort of cancerous way of doing business. And these are the things that we really have to take on. And, I'm hoping we can do it.
I give you all, movie suggestions.
Yeah.
Because I have to rethink my positions. I've been reading histories and, classic history, Greek history, and so forth. And now I think I probably should be seriously reading an English satirist named William Makepeace Thackeray to be in tune with the times. The Luck of Barry Lyndon, I think, might be work out fine.
That's not bad. I've never read it, but I did like the movie, and I love the voice of the narrator. And is that the voice you have in your mind when you read the book?
Exactly. Vanity Fair, The Luck of Barry Lyndon, The Virginians.
So damn good. Yes,
History of Henry Esmond, The Book of Snobs. Snobs would be a perfect new book to write and
read.
That's
awesome. Yeah, I'd love to. That would be good. That'd be good, Jeff.
Jeff, what do you think?
Sure.
The Book of Snobs.
I'm in. Yeah, sure.
Right now, everybody go out and read, get Stanley Kubrick's The Luck of Barry Lyndon, or what do they call it? Just Barry Lyndon?
Barry Lyndon, yeah. You know what I loved about that movie the most?
What?
Just that every scene is like a live painting. The cinematography is just so amazing.
Tableau.
Yes. And in its way, the other great little movie, The Duelists, also has some of that. Just was really the one with Harvey Keitel and Keith Carradine. Oh my God, that's a great movie.
But since Trump has won,
yeah,
neither of us, neither you nor I nor our friend Michael Ledwith, would have to shout, "You never love the emperor," because he won election in a crushing fashion. And now we come to the end of our podcast, but what say you is the next step, Nick?
Well, I think the next step is ask people to do this when they think about like foreign policy, because this is like the third thing that we kind of talked about. A lot of people in Europe and elsewhere were in denial about Trump winning, partly because they relied for almost all their information on the corporate media, the 90% of which is reflecting the establishment deep state point of view and reflects the same sort of point of view that you see in Brussels with Ursula von der Leyen and all the sort of European bureaucratic elites. But as I was actually on TV and Romanian TV today, this question came up and I referenced a piece that I wrote for you called, the deep state, U.S. deep state through European eyes. And the reason why I brought it up was because I was trying to do there is suggest to people that they need to start learning the grammar of the next Trump administration, because this is the reality. If you want, you can't pretend it doesn't exist. You have to understand it and learn how to deal with it. Just like we have to, as American diplomats or intelligence officers or whatever, have to learn about, at least ideally, would have to learn about the areas in which we are operating so that we can be effective. And, we'll see. Some countries have done that well. Some do not do that so well. Some are resisting because they just don't want to deal with the consequences of having to refurbish or to alter drastically the ideological edifice that has sustained themselves in power in Europe. But it's a change. And, it's going to be an interesting thing. I think it's going to be an iterative process. You're going to have, the United States talking to Europeans about issues like European security and Ukraine. And, we were just talking about how Marco Rubio is talking about ending the Ukraine war. This is a give and take process. It's going to be hard. It's going to be a hard bargaining from the United States, but it's also the idea is to bargain. The idea is to keep the relationship. It's just to change the terms of the relationship. And the Europeans have to get the truth with that reality. This was not a fluke election. This was a repudiation of 21st century practice. And, you know, they may try to run out the clock or wait, see if they can, see if the blob can somehow just kind of smother people, like we were talking about a little bit earlier about capture, institutional capture. But I suspect that the American people, I mean, the alignment, the realignment has been extraordinary. The ethnic and economic class interests represented in the Republican Party are extraordinary. It's an extraordinary phenomenon, what we're seeing here. And the implications of this are widespread and permanent. And a wise European diplomat or policymaker will say, look, this, you know, we want to understand Americans' reality on the ground and to be able to deal with it. So, I mean, that was the purpose of writing that article, and I hope that that's what we continue to do. And that goes for us, too, as we sort of pursue these things. We can't, we have to perceive the reality on the ground. We can't, you know, pretend that, you know, it's a simple cartoon about freedom versus democracy or that kind of BS. We have to think about what's actually works, what doesn't, what's possible, what's not, and make changes accordingly based on realistic, hard-headed sort of analyses of the situation, and that applies across the board. So anyway, that was the point I was getting at before we started talking about Barry Lyndon, but I love Barry.
The article is The American Deep State Through Foreign Eyes. It was satire, written satire, but it was really pressing and direct.
Yeah.
And I recommend it highly. And I think I might, if I had the author's permission, I might even republish.
Yes, you may.
Nick, thanks for being here.
Yeah, thanks, Nick.
Thank you, guys. And again, that's great. And we'll see what we can do. But it's a wonderful day in America. Thank God. Looks like through.
Nicholas Spyridon Cass, my brother Nick, is Senior Fellow for European Affairs at the Center for the National Interest. He served in U.S. government for 31 years, retiring in January of 2021. January 20th, 2021. Most recently, he was Deputy Assistant Secretary of State, Director for European Affairs twice, Director of Intelligence Programs at the White House National Security Council, and Deputy National Intelligence Officer for Europe at the National Intelligence Council. A Turkish and Kurdish speaker, he was for many years at the U.S. Embassy in Ankara, Turkey, and he also served at the Central Intelligence Agency, including as intelligence briefer to the Director of Central Intelligence, and was awarded for unique contributions to the CIA human intelligence mission. Now in the private sector, he can be found on X and LinkedIn. Nick Cass, I'm so proud of you, and this country needs you, and thank you very much.
Thanks, guys. I'm proud of you. Nick. Proud of both of you guys. You guys do great work.
Oh, come on.
Hey, man.
All right, do you have the 10 bucks I need? Okay.
Love you guys. All right.
Thanks, man.
Love you.
Yeah, take care, man.
For Jeff Carlin, executive producer, WGN Radio, my friend, master of pies, baker of pies, master of cats, and also the man who helped get rid of that squeaky chair because I'm sitting in one of Christine's
nice
recommended nice comfy chairs, posture protected chairs.
Yes, sure. Ergopastic.
And for me, John Cass, editor-in-chief of John Cass News, where you always get a good cup of common sense. Join us again next time for another edition of the Chicago Way podcast on WGN Plus.